Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We've got a full boat here in the studio today. Sitting across from me is Gary LeMaster.
Good morning, everyone.
He's one of our regulars. And we have with us, participating in the interview today, Karen McCullen, who is on the Sedona Oak Creek School Board. Karen?
Good morning, everyone.
And we have with us two candidates for Superintendent of Public Instruction, David Garcia and Sharon Thomas. You folks want to say hello?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Do we want to start off with, why don't you tell us who you are and why you're running for the office of Superintendent of Public Instruction? But we forbid you to say anything about your opponent, Hoopenthal, John Hoopenthal, because...
You can leave that up to me.
Yeah, I'll leave that up to Gary.
The master of robocalls for private schools as a Superintendent of Public Instruction.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself, and I guess we'll start with Sharon.
Okay. I'm Sharon Thomas. I'm a sixth-generation Arizonan. I was a small business owner, mother of two children who attended public school, and I've been a public school teacher for more than a decade. And I'm running for Superintendent of Public Instruction because I believe a real teacher matters. We've had over 20 years of policy experts running our state schools, and they've been running them into the ground because they don't understand what is needed for teachers and students in our classrooms and the challenges that we face every day. I am a certified teacher, as I said, with two degrees, my bachelor's and my master's in teaching and in administration. I've taught all the way from kindergarten to college, and I believe we need a strong advocate and leader for our schools. We need to demand equity and accountability for our schools, traditional public, as well as for our charter schools, and for the money that is going into the private schools, which we have seen that Gary just talked about. And we also need to bring everyone into the conversation. This is about Arizona's future. Our students are all of our futures. And this is a shared responsibility from the legislators to the parents, the students, and the voters. And the only way we're going to really improve our schools is if we have certified, qualified teacher leadership. So thank you.
David?
Great. Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be on today. A couple things about me. I'm a native Arizonan, born and raised. I'm a first-generation college student, however, something I am very proud of, that I'm the first in my family to go to college. But my path forward was, not so straightforward. I didn't study as much as I should have in high school, and as a result, in order for me to advance, I had to take advantage of what I consider one of our most successful social programs, and that's the GI Bill. I went to the Army. I was an infantryman. Went in when I was 17, got turned 18 in basic training, and that experience turned my life around. I took high school over again, and then came back home, went to Arizona State, and since then went to the University of Chicago, where I have a PhD in education policy research and institutional studies. And I have spent my time in impacting public schools in Arizona in order to make them better places. And my experience, for example, is I worked at the state legislature in a position that involved both Democrats and Republicans, a research position. I was the associate superintendent for the state of Arizona, so I know exactly what I'm getting into and ready to go day one. And for the last 9 years, I've been a education policy professor teaching teachers who are now education leaders all over the state at Arizona State University. And my primary reason for running is because we need to invest back in our public schools. I have two daughters who are in the Phoenix Elementary School District, and I know that we can't continue to take from our public schools. We need to build them. And what I also know is our message with regard to the importance of public schools is one that can cross all boundaries, regardless of your political stripe, regardless of your situation or where you live. What we want out of our public schools, every single family, is they want public schools to help their students do better than they did. And I think that perspective is what will eventually get Arizona to come on board with supporting our public schools.
You're both Democrats, and likely the legislature will remain Republican.
How are you planning to work with the Republican legislature to get simply more funding for our schools? Because the schools seem terribly underfunded. Teacher salaries, at least up here in Sedona, what are $26,000 a year?
Less than $30,000.
$30,000 a year. How will you be able to work with the legislature? What will you do and what to get better funding for our schools? Sharon, please.
Well, I have already been doing this work the entire time I've been a teacher. I've been a teacher lobbyist at the legislature every year, working on to bring issues to our legislators, to let them know the issues and the concerns that we face and the support that we need. And it's not just about finances. There is many of the laws that have been, you know, the evaluation system, the empowerment scholarship accounts, the vouchers, these other type of things that are really dismantling, undermining the success of our public schools and of our teachers. So I've been working at the legislature already. I also have been meeting regularly with legislators on both sides of the aisle. I was the only candidate who was present at the budget debates this year to speak to legislatures about the need for the funding, for the support for the new curriculum, the new standards, the new tests that are coming on. So I've been doing this already, but I will continue to do that kind of work. Education is a nonpartisan issue, and that's what it should be addressed at. By making our argument to both sides of the aisle, with the issues that I know as a classroom teacher, what we face every day. No other candidate has that knowledge because no other candidate has been there. So we need an advocate for schools that is knowledgeable and experienced, that can go to the legislators and make the argument of why we are all in this together. These are Arizona students, not Democratic or Republican students. This is Arizona's future at stake. We have to fund our schools.
Great, thank you. Well, to start off with, I think we need to change the discussion just a little bit. And I have seen folks at the legislature advocating for funding, which turns into a discussion of asking for more money. And I don't think we do a good enough job of having the legislature nor the public understand what that means. And from my perspective, the conversation needs to switch to opportunities. See, lack of funding means our students do not have the same opportunities as other students in other states, in other places, where funding provides some of those opportunities. It is opportunity that I think we need to take to the legislature with regard to moving forward and getting investments in public schools. And the way we're going to do it, is bringing a broad coalition of people on board with that, with the argument in favor of public schools. And I am happy, very proud to say that my campaign has been endorsed by, for example, two chambers of commerce, Tucson and Chandler, John Hupenthal's hometown, Chandler Chamber of Commerce. The way that it's going to happen is by bringing a broad coalition of folks to the legislature together to make this case. And it's where we're already moving in this campaign and where we will continue to move when we get the opportunity to work with the legislature to make this argument.
Now, one of the issues in this campaign, we heard a lot of misinformation and rhetoric about this Common Core. We know Arizona adopted these standards. The schools have been implementing over the last couple of years on this new set of standards. If you can explain a little bit why you think the standards are good, what they are, and how to move forward with these new set of standards.
Yeah, on the standards, a couple things. One is I'm in favor of the standards. We need academic standards. We have had them in this state for over 20 years. We've got to remind folks that academic standards are not new. They have been around for, as I said, over 20 years in Arizona, and all they are is what students need to know and be able to do at the end of each grade level. However, we also, as part of the Common Core requirements, need an assessment, and we need a high quality assessment so that teaching and learning does not lower to the level of the test. But the most important place to be, in my opinion, moving forward, is on the accountability side. And here's where I differ and have a plan that no other candidate has, and that is, right now, from an assessment standpoint, accountability standpoint, we're asking our schools to almost exclusively get students through multiple choice type tests. The letter grades that just came out, 96% of that letter grade is based off the standardized test.
This is the grade for the school.
This is just the grade for the school. That's absolutely right. And by the way, the primary measure by which the public understands how schools and educators are doing. What we need to do is have the standards, have a high quality assessment, but we cannot have standardized assessments count as almost exclusively what we're asking our educators and schools to do. In its place, I'd like to put in real world indicators measuring what matters to students for life after high school. give you a couple examples, getting a career in technical education or vocational education certificate, or an AP credit, or finishing a rigorous curriculum, proficiency in multiple world languages, certification in a programming language. Those are great outcomes, by the way, that are going to be helpful with regard to going to the public for additional investment and the direction we should be going.
So let me ask you, Sharon, why is it called Common Core originally, and where did it come from? Because people are being told that it's a federal takeover of education. They're being taking it that Obama personally wrote it. I don't know what, but what is it, and why is it called that, and why do you need standardized testing at all? Because you can't tell from school to school how the kids are doing if you don't have it. Is that it?
Let me demystify a little bit and clarify. There is no Common Core test. There is no test attached to or mandated through the Common Core. The Common Core is simply a set of standards. Standards are goals, objectives that we want our students to reach, skills that we believe that that has been set that they need to have at each grade level and then, of course, through high school so that they are prepared for college. That's all they are, a set of goals. We then, as teachers and districts, create the curriculum the tests align to, and then we pick, as a state, the test that we believe will best give us the results for all of our students. Now, the reason we need a Common Core, and as a classroom teacher, I know this, and you guys may know this, we're a transient society. We get students coming in and out of our classes that are at different levels, whether they're coming from another school in Arizona or a school from across the country. We need to know at what level they are working, where they should be, and what they've learned. You know, how many times has a student gone from one school to another to have relearned the same thing they learned before, or to miss information because, hey, it was taught last semester and you weren't here. Excuse me. So we do need common standards. But I do, I support the Arizona College Career Ready Standards because we do need to look at the standards and make them our own. And we need a strong leader that will go out and bring this argument to parents, to voters, so that they know why the Common Core matters and why it is important. I'm the only candidate that has any experience with Common Core. I have written curriculum aligned to Common Core, trained teachers for the past 4 years in implementing that curriculum. I've worked with the curriculum in the classroom, modified it, and I've also worked with the Department of Education aligning our curriculum K through college so that we have a smooth alignment. There was no federal involvement in the Common Core creation. There were actually Arizona teachers as well as teachers from across the country involved in creating those. And there were people from other areas as lawyers were involved, which they do have skills in technical writing. The federal government has simply put their stamp of approval on it, and it is tied to the race to the top. So there are some ties, but the Common Core has been around in other states for more than a decade. But it's just expanded here, been reworked and recreated, and now we have them here in Arizona. It is a more rigorous expectations than AIMS, which were simply 10th grade standards. Now, I believe that the debate should be more around which test we're going to use that are aligned to the standards and how we're going to determine whether our students are meeting those goals. But there's really a lot of hyperbole and misinformation about the standards themselves that we need to just debunk. They're just goals. They're just skills that we need to help our students to reach.
So Common Core is not telling you folks what exactly to teach in high school.
No, it doesn't tell us.
Writing the books for you.
No, it doesn't say what we have to teach. It does say which or how. It's not part of instructional practice. It says what skills should be taught at each grade level. And it does something else. It does what we call spiraling back. So while a skill's been taught in third grade, that skill's going to be reinforced through fourth grade and fifth grade. So it does some very nice steps along the way, and it does have standards all the way from our first graders through high school that are aligned to each other so we have the students aligned and on track to be successful. Simply about skills. They're no different than AIMS except that they're a lot better.
David, what's the role of the superintendent of public instruction in instituting something like Common Core, which I guess it means the Common Core of knowledge and skill that you need across the country to go to get more technical education, to go to college, and to begin your career. What's the, I guess for both of you, what does the superintendent of, what's the role of superintendent of public instruction in implementing these and
Sure. The primary role of the state superintendent is a policy role. It's a role of working with the State Board of Education, the Charter Board, as well as the state legislature in a couple of things. One, adopting the standards. And second, a very important role is the state, through the help of the State Board, adopting an appropriate assessment of those standards. The state does not do curriculum. That is done at the local level and should be done at the local level. The state's responsibility is to set the guidelines and policies for the implementation of the standards and of the assessment. There's also a very important public part of it as well in terms of informing the public. And also an enormously important part is the role that the Department of Education plays in making sure that our school districts are prepared at every level for the standards and the assessment. So at the state level, it is very much about working with policymakers and making sure that the assessment and the standards are aligned properly, and then working with the public, informing the public.
Sharon, your role as the superintendent of public instruction.
Yes, I feel that the superintendent has to be more than just sitting in an office pushing papers. We have to be a strong advocate and visible leader in our communities. That's why we have the misinformation right now about Common Core and the new test coming in, because no one has been a leader for education. No one has been an advocate for not just for schools, but also for parents and for voters to help them be informed. So as superintendent, I will be out in the communities to inform our voters and our parents and our students why Common Core matters, why the new test matters. I already have experience in doing this with the parents of my district students. The way you have to inform them. You can't just say these are some new goals that you have to achieve and, you know, good luck with understanding what they are. It's part of this is public relations. We have to be visible and involved in the community. And that's why our schools have been declining, because we have had missing in action leaders. It's time to have a strong advocate that will be in the community, letting people know why the Common Core matters, why we need to support these, and what we can do, not just in our superintendency office, not just as teachers, but how voters and parents can support what they're doing.
Speaking of missing in action leaders, I referenced earlier Hoopenthal's robocall about private schools. And that leads me to a question of, what do you think the role of private and charter schools should be, and how would you address the what seems to be a movement by Republicans to push kids into private schools and take funding from public schools and aim it at private?
The privatization stops when I'm superintendent of public instruction. Public education is the foundation of our democracy, and our public schools, our traditional public schools, serve nearly 90% of our Arizona students. I am a strong supporter of public education, and that's why I'm running. We need to put our focus on our traditional public schools and demand equity and accountability. When public funds go into private pockets, that is no longer private. We have a fiduciary oversight as superintendent for where those funds are going and how they're being spent. The empowerment scholarship accounts, as they're called currently, have more than $1 million out there that nobody knows where it's gone. There is no accountability for if that money is even spent on a school, how it's being spent, if parents are holding it back for a college account, buying big screen TVs. No accountability. We should not be funding private schools. Those schools aren't private, and they have to open their books once they take public funds. I do not support the vouchers for private schools, and we have to demand equity and accountability with our charter schools. Currently, we're hearing the hyperbole that charter schools perform better. That is wrong. The data and the research now shows charters are not outperforming traditional public. In fact, quite often they are doing worse. But they are also not playing on a level playing field. They get more funds. They don't have the high expectations for certification of teachers. They don't enroll all students. They can cap their enrollment. If they don't provide special needs for students, they don't have to take those students. There needs to be equitable playing field so that everyone is getting a fair, equitable education. And that's Arizona's future.
I think we need to be absolutely clear with our position on vouchers and public money leaving for private purposes. And mine is very straightforward. I'm against vouchers. I'm against them because my role as superintendent of public instruction will be to improve public schools, and vouchers do not improve public schools.
Aren't people making a fortune, David, off of these empowerment funds? Aren't even some of the legislatures involved in taking monies? I guess this question for both of you folks is from doing the empowerment stuff and, what's the story on that? How can they, a legislature also be a guy collecting money for, distributing scholarships? And there are these, I guess, under the table bargains where you give a scholarship for my kids, I give a scholarship for your kids, and we get to all be happy together. What's, and it's really, it is both, it's really taking a serious amount of money from our public schools, right? These programs, this privatization.
It is, but I think that part of the challenge when you go down that road and say there's no accountability and we need to hold them accountable, it assumes, that's what the legislature will do, by the way, they will find some accountability and say, are you in favor of it now? And the answer still is with me, no. Because my goal as superintendent of public instruction is to improve public schools. And even if you're better accounted for, any measure that takes public money away from private schools, public money away from our public schools and puts it into the private sector through a voucher is against my goal of improving public schools. But here's the key. And the discussion at the legislature is actually not the one we're having right now. See, this is couched in a discussion of school choice. That's the discussion, not necessarily vouchers, not privatization, but school choice. And here, folks, we need to take a very different position, and here's where I stand. I am in favor of school choice. We need fantastic school choices, and here's the key, in a public school system. And that's where we draw the line. I also see myself very, very differently. My daughters attend a traditional public school, and that is my choice. I'm a chooser. My family and I could go anywhere, but we're choosing traditional public schools because that's the best choice for our children. Now, what happens at the legislature is they make it very easy. They say if you're a traditional public school parent, you're trapped or you're left behind. That's not true. We need to remind folks that there are hundreds and thousands of parents who are making the choice to be in traditional public schools and then demand that their choice is respected and that their choice is accounted for and funded at the state level. Because the conversation we're having now quickly gets into school choice, and we need to head that one off at the pass and remind everyone that there are public school parents all over the state who are making the choice to be in traditional public schools, as well as charter schools, which are public schools, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, conflict of interest is unethical no matter where we see it. When our superintendent comes from a charter school background or owner of charter schools and has never attended a public school or sent his children, we can see those problems. When our legislators own charter schools, make benefits off of private schools, have friends in the private prison system, and we see the direct connection between the privatization of schools and the privatization of prisons and that school-to-prison pipeline. That is unethical, and it needs to stop. And so we need someone, for one thing, that will bring attention to this, because many of our voters, maybe many of your radio listeners, don't realize that these are the people that are making many of these decisions, because there's not always full disclosure. And when there's conflict of interest, they're still voting. They're not stepping back and saying, I have a conflict of interest, I can't vote. So we need to bring attention to that. We also need to look at the world of charters and private schools and the segregation that this is creating, the have and have nots, and not just through ethnical segregation, but also economic segregation that is being created through this system and the privatization movement. We have choices in our public schools. We have magnet schools. We have open enrollment, and we do have the charters, whether they're district or the traditional. So we have the choices that we need. We don't need to support our private schools. We need to focus on our public and how we are serving those students in our traditional schools.
Yeah, we've over the last, well, 5 or 6 years, we know Arizona's had some of the deepest education cuts in budgeting, and we talk about school choice, and magnet schools, but all our regular schools that are funding cut to the degree that all of those extra programs have really been hurt. The legislature has talked a lot about career and technical education over years. That's been cut. For example, a ninth grader cannot take a career and technical class, which is, if you want to get a certificate for something in school, you can only do it for 3 years. You don't get that fourth year. You're not allowed to do that in ninth grade. None of those funds can be used in the junior high to introduce students to the variety of career options that might be available for them, so when they can start to think of, do I want to go to college? Do I want to go to trade school? Do I want to get some kind of a technical certification? How do I go about doing that? Because those funds have been cut drastically in the last few years. And of course, the corollary on some of these other things are the other funds that we spend in schools, music, art, some of these other elective fields, some of which are career choices as well, has all been really cut. So do you see any role in the superintendent in encouraging monies as we get the state legislature to give us more money for schools, to making sure that these funds go towards some of these technical programs, and specifically to replace some of that funding that's been lost.
Yeah. I think in terms of the dollar, the money conversation, you need to make the argument first that it matters. Mm-hmm. I don't think that has been made effectively. I don't think that the public understands the impact. Why? Because, as I mentioned, as Sedona got their letter grades, the thing that will follow most is whether or not Sedona schools got an A or a B or whatever the case may be. And those letter grades do not include career and technical education. They do not include vocational education. If we want those areas to count, then we need to count them in a meaningful way. And that is making sure that when school performance is considered at the state level, that we also take into consideration how well schools are preparing students in vocational education or career and technical education, or, for example, AP credits or scholarship dollars or the number of other real-world measures that matter to students and parents need to be included in how the state is evaluating schools, so that, Karen, we can make the argument that these areas matter and that there is an issue out there when we let parents know that schools, the way we're presently asking them to prepare students, really, which is multiple-choice type tests, aren't getting them ready for life after high school.
I just say, as a Democrat, I'm happiest with my tax dollars going to for education. I think that's the best investment for the United States, is quality education. And I think that you both have emphasized in talking to you earlier about the need for technical education. We have no programs here like they have in Germany that go from technical education to apprenticeship, mm-hmm. to high-paying jobs. As superintendent, you could improve the possibilities for technical education so then they could go off to a community college and finish up so they could learn some of these skilled trades?
Exactly. Electives equal success for students. And quite often, this is where our students that maybe struggle in traditional academics will find that success. And sometimes that's what keeps them going in school, since we do not have a law that keeps our kids in school till 18, which I believe we should. Sometimes they need these kind of things to keep them going. And our career technical education does that. I have experience as an academic and a CTE teacher, and I should say some districts are able to take ninth graders. It depends on the funding, because I've had ninth graders in my career and technical programs, but it has been drastically cut. And these programs provide that success and that support for those students going directly into career, or maybe, as you said, going to community college, or maybe having to delay college for a little while, or support themselves while they're in college, as I had to do while I was raising my family. So those are really valuable. And I do need to correct one thing. The CTE programs, as all programs, are counted in the way we rate our school's performance. I just came from a CTE school where I'd been working the past few years, and we had multiple programs where students could become successful. They could leave with a cosmetology license, a CNA, certified nursing assistant, pharmacy tech, automotive, 16 programs just in my school. And then we also have our magnet programs, which are slightly different. Those are traditionally going to be academic, more science, math, our STEM programs. And I know here you have an agricultural STEM program, which is wonderful. So we need to support what is going to support our students, because that's what this is about. This is about students and how we can help them be successful so Arizona is successful. So we have to fight for that funding. And making that argument that this is not a Republican-Democrat issue. We take this to the legislators. We show them how our students are successful, how this leads to them becoming tax-paying citizens and involved citizens, which is what we want, and how this leads to economic success for students, for communities, and for Arizona.
I just want to take a second to make sure your listeners are well informed. The letter grade that came out for Sedona does not include career and technical education. 96% of that letter grade is based off the standardized test score. Remaining 4 is graduation rate, et cetera. But that is a figure that I calculated, I put out there. The Arizona Republic fact-checked it, and it came back 4 stars correct. So I want to make sure that listeners understand that the demands, what they see in the paper with regard to those letter grades, is the outcome of standardized tests.
They do evaluate your programs as part of the grade. I've been there. I'm the only one that's been in the school when we've gone through one of these evaluations. They very much want to know what programs you have and use that.
For accreditation purposes, yes, but that's not the letter grade.
No, this is for grading.
With regard to education funding, like so many other things in Arizona, I like to use the term TGFM, thank God for Mississippi, because if it wasn't for Mississippi, we'd always be at the bottom, and sometimes are anyway. There was a recent court ruling about funding in Arizona that I think the amount that the court ruled that schools had been underfunded was something like $317 million, if I'm not mistaken. What would you have to say about that? What's your expectation that the schools will actually receive that? And what kinds of things should we be aware of with the upcoming legislative session regarding that?
That's a great question, and a little bit different than what I normally hear. Most people assume it's going to get right to the schools immediately. That's not the case at all. There is still a legislative battle ahead to make it happen. I think it's a travesty that our school districts had to sue the state for money that voters had already voted on. But the battle is not over. The battle is not over. Because the legislature still has to take this up, and when they do, my concern, having worked at the legislature, having written school finance legislation, is that this legislature, the first thing they're going to do is count every dollar they have already given against the $317 million that is owed. And that is where we need somebody with the experience who has led legislation at the legislature before up there, making sure that the legislature does not pull into their normal bag of tricks to account for money. And in the end, if we do not, it will not make its way to the classroom in the way it should.
Sharon, didn't the legislature violate the state constitution when they took this much money from school funding?
Well, this was actually voter dollars, and I wanted to make sure people understand that. These are dollars that the voters voted should go to our schools. And how many times do we see our legislature, not just on the education issues, but on other issues, oh, the voters didn't know what they wanted. They didn't know what they were voting on, so we'll do this for them. And that's what this was part of, respecting the voters. And it's not just the $317 million. That was just for last year. Excuse me. We have to go back again for the $1.6 billion that they, and really this is owed to voters if you think about it, voter dollars that they put into education.
When did voters do this, Sharon? When did they vote?
This was like a decade ago.
2000.
Yeah, I was trying to think back, and that was before I got into education, but I knew I had my students in it. My children then were in education. Voters support education. They support education funding. The way we get this money is not just through battling at the legislature, which is important, lawsuits, which are coming not from the superintendent's office, but from other entities, which is also valuable. But we need to reach out to our community, our citizens. I'm wondering how many of your folks driving today realize that the legislature did not give the dollars they voted for education to education. And when we involve our communities and we get our communities on board and they start getting involved and letting their legislators know, they expect them to do what they voted them in to do and what they voted on as far as a voter initiative, that's how we make the change.
So, David, that's why they have to pay the $317 million, because of their violation of a voter initiative.
It's a voter initiative. Yes. Specifically, it was an initiative for inflation increases, which the legislature gave for a few years, didn't for a number of years, particularly during the economic downturn. So what the voters voted on specifically was an inflation increase for school districts, and that's what the legislature has not funded and what ultimately went to court.
Since Gary and Karen have raised the issue, what can you do as superintendent of public instruction to see that the money doesn't just get manipulated by the legislature, and so that the schools really don't end up with an actual increase of the $370 million? You talked about it earlier, but...
Well, I would say getting the community on board to be an advocate for where those dollars are going, as well as being an advocate at the legislature. It takes all of us together. This is a shared responsibility. We all have to come together to fight for our schools. So working at the legislature, bringing in the media, bringing in the communities, and saying, this is what you voted for, this isn't where it's going, and letting them know, and of course being an advocate at the district level and working.
I think the answer is in broad support. As I mentioned, we have the business community who's jumped on board with my campaign. They're a very important part of this discussion. We need to make the argument, though, that this impacts everybody in a concrete way. It impacts our businesses who are looking to attract others to come and invest in Arizona. And it's that argument that's going to help them get down to the legislature to impact this. But in the end, you need somebody who understands school finance well. And this is what I did at the legislature. I know it well. And we'll make sure that myself and the folks that we have down there working are well informed so that they understand where the legislature is going to turn next and make sure we head them off the path and are having a clear discussion as to the decisions the legislature is making and the impact on all Arizonans going forward.
Yeah, another issue that's been in the news a lot, more from other states than Arizona regarding teachers. We've had discussion on teacher tenure, grading teachers by standardized tests. What do you see the role of the superintendent in increasing opportunities for teachers in the state, increasing the numbers of teachers? We look at facing teacher shortages. Lots of teachers in Arizona are close to retirement age. And what do you see your role in working with that aspect to make the profession more attractive for teachers in Arizona?
Sure. Well, let's start with the shortage. Remember, the goal is to get teachers in, but more importantly, we want our best and brightest to enter teaching. And in my opinion, it really centers around one key thing. We need to treat our teachers like professionals. And that has two key parts to it. Number one, we need to pay our teachers in a way that is commensurate to their contributions to Arizona from a civic and economic standpoint. But secondly, we need to let our teachers teach. And this is where the over-reliance on standardized testing, I think, has been most detrimental, because it takes the power away from teachers in the classroom level to make the kinds of decisions necessary. And more importantly, takes a lot of joy out of teaching. I return back to the classroom myself primary night to teach again. And one of the things that is most exciting about that is the chance to get in front of the class and have control and have the ability to use what I know well and teach well to students in a way that is going to not only empower myself but them as well. We've taken that away with our overemphasis on standardized testing, and letting them teach is a very important part of it.
Well, one way we do this is by supporting our teachers, by being a strong advocate and a leader. What our students and our teachers and our public schools are doing well every day is not being publicized. So we need to raise that respect for the teachers, stop the blood sport that teacher bashing has become, and really support them. But it's not just about that kind of support. It also is funding. And you guys here in rural Arizona especially know this problem, because our inner city schools get federal funds through title funds and desegregation money so that they don't bleed teachers when they're struggling economically like our rural schools, because they have that money to backfill. Our rural school weight needs to be adjusted and increased. There's no reason we're paying teachers starting salaries below $30,000 across our rural Arizona. We have to support these as well-educated professionals and pay them as such. That's the only way we're going to have retention and recruiting in our rural areas. And every student gets a base level of funding, but for small schools, that's raised slightly. That amount needs to be up. And we also need to support our teachers and really help bring teachers to Arizona by bringing that information to the public on what is really wonderful happening in our schools, instead of always hearing the bad and not getting the support that we're needing.
I think evaluation of teachers, but I mean the valuation of teachers, I should say. My brother was in Vietnam, and they were a group of the guys were talking to some South Vietnamese officers, and the officers asked them what their fathers did. And one guy said, my father's a banker. And they went, okay. And the other guy said, my father owns a business. And they went, okay. And the third guy said, my father's a teacher. And they went, a teacher? And that was the high status in the Confucian system. This very high value of people who are teaching the next generation in their culture was really struck. And the Americans were like dumbfounded. Well, you know, my dad owns a steel company. It didn't matter. What mattered is if you were a teacher.
Maestra. That's what my Spanish students call me, which is master.
Yeah. Well, one of the things, though, there are some lessons that we can take. I had the privilege of spending 9 days in Finland, and your listeners may or may not know, but Finland has some of the highest test scores in the country, but their students spend the least amount of time, or in the world, pardon me, in schools. It's a country, however, and I was there for a number of days, did a talk at the University of Helsinki, and what Finland has done, however, is, I think, a very good model. They do value their teachers. It's a highly respected profession, both from a societal perspective, but also from a financial perspective as well. And as a result, they get their best and brightest to come into the profession.
I like to ask the questions that nobody wants to answer, the controversies. But two of the ones that, and we talked about this a little bit before we went on the air, but What's your position on sex education in schools? And then I'll throw out something even more controversial, and that's creationism.
Oh, okay. Sex ed in schools is not taught. It was when I was a child, and it isn't taught anymore, and that's why we're fifth highest pregnancy rate in the country. Many parents think that this should be a discussion at home, but unfortunately, it isn't happening in all homes. We need to give students the facts so that they can make the decisions that they are faced with, especially with, by the time they hit high school. Every day, they're making these kind of decisions, whether to become sexually active, what kind of choices to make, whether to make choices about birth control, and is that birth control available to them. And what happens when a young mother gets pregnant? We know she's more often going to go on welfare and other government supports. She's not going to be likely to be a contributing member of society, which she should have that opportunity to be. And then her children as well are going to struggle. We can stop that by providing the sex education in the classroom. And it's also about health care. I mean, sex ed is about being a healthy person, reproductive health. This is part of adult life. And they need to know this information so that they are prepared and can make these decisions. And ultimately, it's so that they can be successful as well in the world. And as far as you want me to answer the creationism now as well?
Sure.
Okay. The creationism, also, I believe this is one thing that should be taught at home. This is not science. Science is what we teach in school. Religion is up to every parent to teach their religious beliefs in home, in their religious facility of choice. Currently, Mr. Hoopenthal has not brought the science Common Core standards in because he mistakenly says it mandates the teaching of evolution. Well, it doesn't mandate we teach anything, for one thing, the Common Core, but evolution is a scientific theory that should be taught in a science class. There is a debate for that when you go home, around the dinner table, or at your religious facilities.
I always say that evolution is a theory like gravity is a theory.
Yes.
They're both well established.
Yes.
David, do you have anything?
Well, yeah, I would answer it from an education standpoint, and both of them apply here. Our goal is to educate students. That means you give them differing perspectives on the world. That is how we all come to conclusions about where we stand individually. And with regard to offering those perspective, multiple perspectives, which are out there, they're part of our conversation. It is what students are going to encounter when they leave high schools or when they move on. And I think that allowing students the ability to learn multiple perspectives is important. That's going to get them in the best position to be successful once they're out in the real world.
We have time for, I guess, one more question. Gary, Karen, do you have a question you'd like to ask our guests?
I'll ask.
You've got
one. I have a cousin who's
a
longtime history teacher in Nebraska, 32 years. He's starting this year, and he constantly faces basically controversy over what I consider revisionist history, that when he teaches something, the parents get all angry and call and say, well, that's not what really happened, even though he's actually teaching the facts.
Gary, you're going to give us a revisionist history question with a minute left. Is that right?
Sorry.
Look, I think the best thing for our listeners to understand is where they can learn more about us. Please go to dg4az.com. That's where you can learn about me. And there, I invite listeners to take a look at both campaigns. You're going to see that my campaign has got a broad coalition of leaders, as well as others who have already jumped on board in order to be successful. And I invite folks to go take a look at both and get an opportunity to make the decisions for themselves.
Why don't you give us the website address again, Dave?
DG4AZ.com. It's on Facebook as well, for those who are connected from a social media perspective.
Sharon?
I'll answer your question quickly. We teach the facts, and that's what should be being taught. A respect for teacher, to go back to your previous question, starts with electing a teacher to be in charge of our public schools in Arizona. It seems a no-brainer for some people, but some people don't get that. So if you believe a certified, educated, qualified, experienced teacher matters, vote Sharon Thomas, Superintendent of Public Instruction, SharonForArizona.com, and on Facebook as well. Thank you so much.
SharonForArizona.com. We want to thank both of our... Gary, you got another question?
I'd just like
You've
to say
two
that,
and a
that,
half seconds.
That we have two great candidates, and I hope you get out and vote in the primary and support the winner when it comes time in November.
Thank you very much for coming in and talking with us today.
Thank
we very
you.
Much appreciate it. The election, August 26th is the primary, and November 4th, I believe, is the general election. Good luck to you both, and good luck to voters to make a great choice. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.